Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Q3 2018 Amdocs Earnings Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following management's prepared remarks, we will host a question-and-answer session, and our instructions will be given at that time. If during the conference today you require operator assistance, press star then zero, and an operator will be happy to assist you. As a reminder, this conference call is being recorded for replay purposes. It is now my pleasure to hand the conference over to Mr. Matt Smith, Head of Investor Relations. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Brian. Before we begin, I would like to point out that during this call, we will discuss certain financial information that is not prepared in accordance with GAAP. The company's management uses this financial information in its internal analysis in order to exclude the effect of acquisitions and other significant items that may have a disproportionate effect in a particular period. Accordingly, management believes that isolating the effects of such events enables management and investors to consistently analyze the critical components and results of operations of the company's business and to have a meaningful comparison to prior periods. For more information regarding our use of non-GAAP financial measures, including reconciliations of these measures, we refer you to today's earnings release, which will also be furnished with the SEC on Form 6K. Also, this call includes information that constitutes forward-looking statements. Although we believe the expectations reflected in such forward-looking statements are based upon reasonable assumptions, we can give no assurance that our expectations will be obtained or that any deviations will not be material. Such statements involve risks and uncertainties that may cause future results to differ from those anticipated. These risks include, but are not limited to, the effects of general economic conditions and such other risks as discussed in our earnings release today and at greater length in the company's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission, including in our annual report on Form 20-F for the fiscal year ended September 30, 2017, filed on December 11, 2017, and our Form 6-K furnished for the first quarter of fiscal 2018 on February 12, 2018, and the second quarter on May 21, 2018. Amdocs may elect to update these forward-looking statements at some point in the future. However, the company specifically disclaims any obligation to do so. Participating on the call with me today are Eli Gellman, President and Chief Executive Officer of Amdocs Management Limited, and Tamar Rapaport-Dagim, Chief Financial Officer. With that, I'll turn it over to Eli.
Thank you, Matt, and good afternoon to anyone joining us on the call today. We are pleased with our solid third quarter performance, which was notable on several fronts. Revenue exceeded the $1 billion mark as the first time and was in line with the midpoint of our guidance adjusting to currency. We maintain a high win rate across our various business lines and operating regions, and we made positive progress integrating our recent acquisitions of Ubiquiti and UXP Systems within the broader Amdocs. This quarter, I am also pleased to report some exciting developments with respect to our strategic initiatives in network function virtualization and media and entertainment. I will provide an update on these important growth engines later in the call. But first, let me offer some color in regarding to our regional businesses' activities in quarter three. Beginning with North America, revenue grew on a sequential basis as we supported the digital modernization and integrated carrier strategies of a broad base of wireless and pay TV customers. Regarding the business environment in North America, service providers continue to face fierce competition resulting from the convergence of wireless and pay TV offerings with content ownership and direct-to-consumer business models. As a result of these rapidly changing market dynamics, we see many opportunities to support the strategic requirements of our customers in North America, which we believe will translate to positive long-term growth trajectory in the region. That said, we remind you of the many moving parts affecting our North American outlook, and we expect sequential trends to fluctuate in the foreseeable future farther before growth resumes in a steadier way. As a reminder, industry consolidation activity continues to present an additional source of uncertainty in our outlook, including T-Mobile planned merger with Sprint or others which may be contemplated in the future. Moving to Europe, we delivered our fourth consecutive quarters of year-over-year growth in spite of foreign currency movement, which negatively impacted our sequential performance. Along the highlights of the quarter, we were pleased to be selected to support the launch of Sky Italia, new telco offering under a multi-year managed services agreement that includes delivery of Amdocs Open Network OSS suite on a cloud-enabled platform. Elsewhere in the region, we were selected as a technology partner for MTS, the leading telecommunication group in Russia and the Commonwealth of Independent States, CIS, where we are part of the project that will enable MTS to achieve greater level of self-service, a reduction in manual processes, and simpler onboarding of new partners in emerging areas such as IoT. Regarding the outlook of Europe, we are on track to grow faster than the corporate average in fiscal 2018, although we remind you that sequential trends could fluctuate due to factors such as foreign currency movement and the project orientation of our customer engagement in the region. Turning to the rest of the world, growth continued at a solid pace in quarter three. During the quarter, we deployed an automated and intelligent operation capabilities for Vodafone India. We also partnered with Telstra in Australia to implement a next-generation OSS platform for its B2B line of businesses that will enable Telstra network domain to evolve towards virtualization while maintaining the impact of its existing support system. Additionally, we recently partnered with Amazon Web Services to deliver cloud-based omnichannel routing and interaction management for Globe Telecom in the Philippines. This is our first award in collaboration with IWS and is notable because it demonstrates that we have deep domain expertise necessary to move communication and media companies into the cloud environment. Overall, our business in the rest of the world is on track to grow on a constant currency basis in fiscal 2018, mainly led by Asia and the surrounding Pacific region, where activity continued to be stronger compared to Latin America. As a reminder, quarterly trends may fluctuate in the rest of the world, primarily due to the project orientation of our customer engagements. To summarize my insight of the regional basis, we are pleased with our execution for the year to date. With only the fourth quarter remaining, we have enough data points to indicate that our revenue from AT&T will probably decline in a double-digit rate in fiscal 2018. And yet, we still expect to meet our total revenue target for the full year as a result of a strong progress that we have made in new and existing customers in the broader North America, in Europe, and in the rest of the world. We believe that this performance is a testament to our unique business model, our focus on execution, and the innovation we're bringing to customers. This strength has been especially evident during the period of rapid market changes we have seen in the last few years, including that resulting from the AT&T's acquisition of Time Warner, which we consider to be a singular industry event of size and magnitude that is unlikely to repeat in the foreseeable future. Now let me update you on regarding some positive and exciting development in the following strategic areas: network function virtualization, or NFV, and media and entertainment. Beginning with NFV, we are today excited to announce that MDOCS is supporting the commercial availability of Comcast's software-defined wide area networks, SD-WAN, service for the enterprise businesses. The SD-WAN offering leverages MDOCS' leading NFV portfolio, which brings orchestration, fulfillment, and automation capabilities to service providers while integrating a wide array of virtualized service functions from vibrant and diverse partner ecosystem. Moreover, this is an important milestone. It comes a year after the first time we told you that we are supporting Comcast beta trial in SD-WAN, and it serves to illustrate how small initial engagement may ultimately lead to a delivery of significant value to our customers. Along these lines, we're also encouraged to have recently seen some pickup in the number of global service providers that are beginning to evaluate NFV, and we are working hard to demonstrate to them that we should be the partner of choice to support their future requirements. Turning to the media and entertainment, the post-merger integration of Vubiquity and UXP are going according to plan, and we are encouraged to have already seen an expansion in the pipeline of opportunities relative to when we closed these transactions earlier this year. Along these lines, we are today pleased to announce that Verizon has selected Vubiquity's managed services and technology platforms to provide the processing and packaging of Verizon's vast video-on-demand and pay-per-view portfolio across the Fios multi-screen platform. This deal represent the expansion and extension of Vubiquity's existing relationships with Verizon and demonstrate that we are well positioned to capitalize on the convergence of traditional service providers with content owners, OTT web players, and the direct content-to-consumer business models. To wrap up, we believe the long-term market dynamics I have outlined today leave Amdocs well-positioned for continued growth, further details of which will be provided in November. In the meantime, we enter quarter four with record 12-month backlog, and we are on track to deliver non-GAAP EPS growth in the mid to high single digit for the seventh consecutive year in fiscal 2018. On a personal note, the board of directors have of today accepted my plan to retire as CEO at the end of fiscal year 2018. I feel very confident in the company's position and long-term outlook, and I believe now is the right moment for me to hand over the reins to my longtime colleague and friend, Shuky Sheffer, who I am pleased to announce will resume the position of President and Chief Executive Officer of Amdocs effective October 1st, 2018. After 31 years with Amdocs, including 8 years as a CEO, I believe this is a natural and timely move, which is well aligned with Amdocs' net maturity and future strategic direction. I have every confidence this transaction will be a smooth one. Shuky is a veteran of Amdocs, who may be a familiar face to those of you who have attended our annual Analyst and Investors Day over the years. I have no doubt that his deep understanding of Amdocs and our markets will serve our employees, our customers, and our shareholders well going forward. And I believe the board has selected a strong leader whose previous experience also includes being a CEO of a NASDAQ-listed company. Just as important, I have every confidence that Shuky will have the support of a deep bench of Amdocs veterans, who each day provide the strong leadership which is acquired across many areas of the company. One of the many examples is our current CFO, Tamar Rapoport-Dagim, who I'm delighted to say will be expanding her role to include that of Chief Operating Officer, where she will be responsible for ensuring the company's continued reputation for operational excellence. I am pleased to have Shuky with us in the room today, and he will be available to take some Q&A later in the call. As for myself, I have gladly agreed to stay on the board, where I still hope to make meaningful contribution to the company and its shareholders in the years to come. With that, I will turn the call over to Tamar.
Thank you, Eli. Third fiscal quarter revenue of $1 billion was at the midpoint of our guidance range on a constant currency basis, after adjusting for a $9 million negative impact from foreign currency movements relative to guidance. Our third quarter guidance range had included a minimal sequential impact from foreign currency fluctuations. Our third fiscal quarter non-GAAP operating margin was 17.3%, unchanged from a year ago and in line with the higher end of our long-term target range of 16.5% to 17.5%. Below the operating line, non-GAAP net interest and other expense was $3.2 million in Q3, primarily reflecting foreign exchange movements. For forward-looking purposes, we continue to expect a non-GAAP net interest and other expense in the range of a few million dollars quarterly due to foreign currency fluctuations. Diluted non-GAAP EPS was $1.03 in Q3, in line with the midpoint of our guidance range of 1 to 1.06. As we anticipated, our non-GAAP effective tax rate of 13.4% in Q3 was near the low end of our expected annual range of 13 to 17%. Diluted GAAP EPS was 64 cents for the third fiscal quarter, below our guidance range of 71 to 81 cents, due to non-recurring restructuring charges, primarily associated with recently completed acquisitions and internal business realignment actions in North America, net of tax effects. Free cash flow was $128 million in Q3. This was comprised of cash flow from operations of approximately $164 million, less $36 million in net capital expenditures and other. Capital expenditure relating to the multi-year development of our new campus in Israel was immaterial this quarter. DSO of 89 days was flat quarter over quarter. We remind you that this item may fluctuate from quarter to quarter. Total unbilled receivables decreased by $4 million as compared to second fiscal quarter of 2018. Our total deferred revenue, both short and long term, increased by $11 million sequentially in Q3. The net balance of unbilled receivables and total deferred revenue reflects our high level of transformation project activity and resulting timing differences between revenue recognition and the invoicing of customers. Our 12-month backlog, which includes anticipated revenue related to contracts, estimated revenue for managed services contracts, letters of intent, maintenance, and estimated ongoing support activities, was $3.33 billion at the end of third fiscal quarter, up $10 million sequentially from the end of the prior quarter. Our cash balance at the end of the third fiscal quarter was approximately $561 million. During the third fiscal quarter, we repurchased $90 million of our ordinary shares. In total, we have, as of June 30, more than $725 million of authorized capacity for share repurchases to be executed at the company's discretion going forward with no stated expiration date. As a reminder, we retain the flexibility to vary the level of share repurchase activity from quarter to quarter, depending on factors such as the outlook for M&A, financial markets, and prevailing industry conditions. Now, turning to our outlook, we expect revenue to be within a range of $980 million to $1.02 billion for the fourth fiscal quarter of 2018. Embedded within this guidance is a negative sequential impact of approximately $5 million from foreign currency fluctuations as compared to Q3. For the full fiscal year 2018, we now expect total revenue growth in the range of 2.2% to 3.2% as reported, compared with 2.3% to 4.3% previously. The midpoint of the new range is 50 basis points lower than the previous guidance due to currencies. We now expect positive impact from foreign currency fluctuations of approximately 0.5% year-over-year for the full year of fiscal 2018, compared with our prior expectation for a positive impact of about 1%. On a constant currency basis, we expect total revenue growth in the range of 1.7% to 2.7% for the full fiscal year 2018, compared with 1.3% to 3.3% previously. Additionally, our fiscal 2018 revenue outlook continues to incorporate an expected drag of roughly 0.5% from directory, which we anticipate will continue to decline in the full year. We continue to expect our non-GAAP operating margins to be within a range of 16.5 to 17.5 in fiscal 2018, and we expect our non-GAAP operating margin to fluctuate at the higher end of this range in fiscal 2018. We expect the fourth fiscal quarter diluted non-GAAP EPS to be in the range of 95 cents to 1.01. With respect to Q4, we expect our non-GAAP effective tax rate to be above the high end of our annual target range of 13 to 17. For the full fiscal year, we still expect our non-GAAP effective tax rate to remain within the same target range of 13 to 17% for the full year. Our fourth fiscal quarter non-GAAP EPS guidance also incorporates an expected average diluted share count of roughly 143 million shares, and the likelihood of a negative impact from foreign exchange fluctuations in non-GAAP net interest and other expense. For the full fiscal year, we expect full-year diluted GAAP EPS growth of flat to negative 3% year-over-year, compared to flat to positive 6% previously, due to the non-recurring restructuring charges recorded already in Q3. Additionally, we now expect diluted non-GAAP EPS growth of 5 to 7% year-over-year, which is narrowed around midpoint of our previous guidance of 4 to 8%. With that, we can turn it back to the operator to begin our question and answer session.
Thank you, ma'am. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you'd like to ask a question over the phone lines, press star and then 1 on your telephone keypad. If your questions have been answered and you wish to move yourself in the queue, simply press the pound key. And to everyone who is participating in our Q&A session today, we kindly ask that you please limit yourself to one question and a brief follow-up. And our first question will come from Tom Roderick with Stifel. Your line is now open.
Yes. Hi, Matt Van Vliet on for Tom. Thanks for taking my question. And congrats, Ellie, on the pending retirement. That's great news, I'm sure, for you, although it brings some positive and a little bit of other news to the story. But congrats on that, certainly. Looking at the business and some of the commentary you made around North America, could you maybe dig in a little bit on what you're seeing now at AT&T that a lot of the overhang from the Time Warner deal seemingly should be behind us? and maybe what your discussions with AT&T have been around, maybe where the projects and some of the things you're working on in the next couple years are headed.
So, Tom, I cannot give you a very detailed exposure to the dialogue we have constantly with AT&T at the highest level. I would give you a few data points. One is, first of all, it's not completely over because the government decided to challenge AT&T. We actually don't believe, personally, the company, we don't believe that they will be able to do that, but it does represent a little bit of a slowdown in the execution plan if you expect the AT&T media to rocket like a spring being released. It takes a little bit longer time. And to remind you, we don't have media numbers from AT&T specifically other than the business that we had originally with Ubiquiti baked into the numbers. We believe this by itself will be over the next couple of years a growth engine, a timing of which we really cannot predict or share right now with you. On other areas which are indirectly affected, AT&T is a very big company, and they see the growth engines, including cricket, including Mexico. They have a lot of business in the enterprise, which is new area for us if we will be able to get in there. And I think they're also revisiting their strategy regarding mobility due to recent years of losing some market share. So altogether, we are seeing in AT&T activities in many, many, many domains, obviously from the network, NFV, 5G, first network and all that, all the way to Mexico and to other areas, including enterprise and in between. But other than that, it's really hard for me to give you more tangible data without compromising AT&T information or without guiding really for a specific customer, which is something that we cannot do. It would not be useful for you or not be useful for us.
All right, great, thanks. And then, a lot of good wins that we saw some the press releases after the close today. Nothing specific on ONAP, but could you give us a little bit of an update in terms of how that's progressing? Are we moving towards being sort of a standardization across some of the larger carriers across the world, or is it still a little bit in flux and you're still pressing forward with the opportunities that you have now? Thanks.
So Tom, basically, if you read between the lines of the prepared remarks, we do see overall more opportunities and more, initial phases. Unfortunately, all of them start very small. But fortunately, we have more and more major carriers, especially the early adopters, because these are the people that make the decision now, that see MDOX as a major contribution to their journey into NFV. So I think that there is no question about NFV. I think we have a better share than anyone else in cooperation with these companies. And we see, uptake in the number of activities we have. The big news of today is Comcast. Comcast is something we started a year ago in one of these small, a couple of million dollars project, and that became the backbone of SD-WAN. SD-WAN is basically the most popular enterprise service, and enterprise is the growth engine of Comcast and many others. So to be the heart of the NFV domain for SD-WAN is a big deal. Regardless to, also not only the numbers and the size of the project, it's the position. I believe once we we'll finish this project. It includes orchestration and activation and active inventory, all of this component. This is the base for additional services. So we are very bullish about it, and you can hear it in our voice. And luckily, we also got this time, which is quite rare, also the permission of Comcast to mention the name specifically. So we are thankful for that. So this is the big news of the quarter, but the Telstra deal of the OSS next generation is also NFV related. They are ONAP follower, and few other proof of concept box that we are doing all around Europe and all around the world are also a good indication that we are on the right track. As I said more than once, now we see more cases, but as I said more than once, the one thing it's really hard for us to predict, and it's not like we really want to hold it back from you, is the pace of the additional projects. But every time we have these data points that I just shared with you, it makes us a little bit more optimistic about the NAV and the investment that we have made in this domain. So it is a very exciting thing for us.
Great. Thank you. And congrats, Shuki, tomorrow on the added role and Ellie on the retirement. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question will come from the line of Jackson Ader with J.P. Morgan. Your line is now open.
Great. Thank you. Good evening, guys. Thanks for taking my question.
Hi.
Ellie, the Ubiquiti managed services contract with Verizon, can you help us how we should be thinking about maybe a Ubiquiti managed services contract versus the legacy Amdocs managed services contracts, how they're structured, how they're priced, maybe term, that sort of thing?
It's slightly different, although there are some components that repeat itself. The idea is that instead of charging Verizon per every transaction on the what is called SVOD and TVOD, which is the transactional video on demand or subscription video on demand, we kind of strike a deal with them that up to a certain level, it all will be included in a retainer, okay, like in a fixed price, so to speak. So it is related to volume eventually, but we basically give them the whole service, packaging it in a certain commercial agreement and to a certain period of time. This specific one is actually including all the video and the video on demand and the pay per view of Verizon Fios. Quite a significant contract, and it's a multi-year. I can't remember, Tamar, do you remember this? How long we signed it for this time?
I'm not sure we were at liberty to say, but
okay,
several years.
Yeah.
So from this respect, it's similar, but it has some different components. And again, it's something that is, I would not say customary, but this is something that Ubiquiti did before, and we may evolve this model later on with slightly different components. But we are very happy with this deal. It's a very important deal for us.
Sure. Okay. And then a quick follow-up. I think, Ellie, you mentioned in your prepared remarks that Europe is expected to outgrow the broader corporate average. And I just want to clarify, is that after foreign exchange headwinds, or was that on a constant currency basis?
Yes, both reported basis as well as obviously therefore constant currency as well.
Okay. All right, cool. Thank you, Tamar.
Thank you, Jackson.
Thank you. And just as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question over the phone lines, press star and then one on your telephone keypad. And our next question will come from Ashwin Shabarkar with Citi. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Let me also start with congratulations, Shuki and Tamar, for your added responsibilities. In the case of Shuki, obviously, new responsibilities as well. Ellie, this is bittersweet. I'm very happy for you, but also will miss you. Every time we've spoken, I've learned a lot. So thank you for that. I wish you the best. I wanted to start by asking about, there are some comments with regards to North America restructuring, and then there is some specific mention of T-Mobile and Sprint. So I want to kind of parse that a little bit more to see if you're making a general statement with regards to a deal, or is there some, you know, financial information that we should know with regards to either that transaction or any details on the restructuring?
So, Ashwin, there is no direct relation whatsoever between, you know, expectations on how we can support T-Mobile and Sprint and between this restructuring. The restructuring is more related to some alignment we've done around recent acquisitions, as well as the fact that we see different dynamics of demand in terms of skill sets, locations, et cetera, within the business that we're seeing. For example, we're very excited to see the Comcast and a video. Obviously, that requires us to shift resources and build up capabilities around Philly. So this kind of changes are requiring also alignment internally, and this is exactly what we're about.
Got it. And then the relationship with AWS that you're setting up, I just want to get into some more details with regards to, as you perhaps involve services like AWS more, how does that change the economics of your contracts?
Overall, it doesn't. It's just a component. We're not talking about this earlier or this specific project in the Philippines. In general, aligning our product set to be cloud agnostic, but primarily we are testing it and we are offering a lot of it as a default on AWS. We have also a strong relationship with Microsoft Azure and others. So we see in regular deals, we see the cloud management systems as a component. We price it as part of the overall deal, and it's just an engine instead of using our own data center or the customer data center or the resource and so on and so forth. We'll use a cloud management system from Amazon or from someone else. So the overall picture does not change. Specifically on projects like this, when we team up with AWS, it's actually basically transforming certain components of Globe in this case onto the cloud. Some of it our applications, some of it adjacent applications. So in this case, we just price it based on the capacity that we are consuming from the cloud. The beauty of it is that we show on one hand to the service, the communication service providers, our capability to do that, and it's something that everybody and his wife more or less needs. And on the other hand, the fact that we have a very close relationship with AWS that started, by the way, on the engineering side and went over to the commercial side, it means that they will call us up and they have salespeople all over the place, and we hope that we will have other customers that will actually require the same type of capabilities. So that's kind of the story about AWS, and it's a very exciting relationship. You know, we developed a lot of rapport based on our requirements from the cloud. We are high-end software, not so simple to carry Amdocs application on the cloud. We started there, and we evolved the relationships throughout there into, you know, the type of deals that we have now with Globe.
Got it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Ashley.
Thank you, and I'm showing no further questions in queue at this time. So now, it is my pleasure to hand the conference back over to Mr. Matt Smith, Head of Investor Relations, for some closing comments and remarks.
Thank you very much for joining the call today and for your interest in Amdocs. We look forward to hearing from you in the coming days, and if you do have any additional questions, please give us a call on the Investor Relations line. Have a great evening. Thanks.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation on today's conference. This does conclude our program, and we may all disconnect. Everybody have a wonderful day.